You're listening to Raising Anchor, the Rhode Island FC podcast, now part of the Blazing Musket family. We're glad you're here. Hello and welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Entrekin, joining you on the first September podcast of the year, Thursday, 9-5. RIFC gets it done in their second clash against Birmingham Legion, taking all 3 points and seeing the return of JJ Williams to form. We're going to talk about that and so much more, including a couple of new faces that we haven't seen in a little bit. And then after that, we're going to get you ready for the away leg to the Riverhounds and break down how important this game is and what's in store for the boys in amber and blue. But before we get any of that done, joining me is not one, but two very special guests, a Raising Anchor special treat live in studio. But first and foremost, the co-host with the most, Jason Carey. Jason, how's it going, my friend?
Doing good. I feel like I need an army of other people with a similar name. There's a lot of Matts out there. There's a lot of Andrews out there. I only know like one other Jason.
I mean, the Matts are the supreme beings when it comes to Rhode Island FC fandom, and you can't be further from the truth on that. And so joining us for the first time of what we hope are many more times, he should need no introduction if you followed him in his own radio journey or his fandom of Rhode Island FC. But Matt Carvalho, how are you doing, my friend? How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me tonight. Pleasure to be here. You know, I'm doing all right. I mean, Rhode Island's doing good. Team's doing good. Everyone's doing well. It's going to be a good night.
I'm so excited that you're able to join us. You're coming off of some really interesting information, which we're going to touch base on a little later in the episode. The downside of us doing this live was we thought we had our three-camera system ready to go, but unfortunately, Matt still hasn't figured out how to do more than two people at a time.
Are you saying we have a three-body problem?
We do have a three... Oh. Well done. Well done. So tip of the cap. If you haven't watched that show, go watch Three Body Problem and then go read the books because it's going to be a while. And then after you've read the books, then go watch the other version of the Three Body Problem and you're just sustained for life. But back to Matt. Tell us a little bit about your life. You know, we met you through some interesting circumstances as we were trying to build our brand. You were already kind of this established radio personality. What should fans know about you and kind of who you are?
Oh, gee. Well, established is one way to put it. I mean, you know, it's a struggling artist, as I like to describe it more so. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm a Pawtucket born and bred, you know, the most beautiful, amazing city of Pawtucket, where Rhode Island FC will eventually call home in just a few more months. But yeah, from Pawtucket, big soccer guy, big Portuguese guy. I mean, Ronaldo's God, as you well aware, the Portugal fan, you know, not Messi. I did date an Argentinian, but she was not a fan of Ronaldo.
Didn't
Messi
he just
girl.
Score his 900th goal today or something?
I think something astronomical.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. Guys, I don't know what you're even talking about. There's only one soccer in the world, and that's USL, and that's Rhode Island FC. So this Ronaldo guy. I'd never heard of him.
I don't know. Different name. But yeah, no, and now I am the host of the Playbook on 990 WBOB.com. We talk all things sports, local sports, Pats, Bruins, Red Sox. None of that matters, though. Of course, on here, we're a big RIFC, which we do cover plenty of on the program week in and week out for all your soccer goodness.
Hey, easy there. Stop trying to steal our fans right off the bat, okay? This is a collaboration, not a theft.
Wednesday nights.
We talk about... nice. We talk about other things. Like, every once in a while, we'll talk about the MLS. And, you know, if we want, we can talk about the White Sox right now being the new, like, negative connotation whenever you've just done terrible in your sporting franchise. Don't White Sox it up. But, you know, hey, listen. I prefer to keep it clean and can keep it USL pure. So... Tim writes in on the chat, by the way. Good evening, gents. Tim, right back to you. So let's get into the fun, because this show, I'm already concerned, three people, we could go 5 hours. So especially with who knows what's going to be said. So let's drop straight into the news. What's been going on around the league, around the team, and what's been going on around Rhode Island? So some of this news is a little dated because the club has this penchant to drop Friday news after we've done a Thursday podcast. Like, you'd think there'd be a better partnership. And those of you from the club that are listening, you know that this is an attack directly on you. But Rhode Island FC announced the launch of its brand new Student Rush program just in time for all those returning college kids and all the local Rhode Islanders hitting college for the first, second, third, or fourth time. It depends on how many times you needed to go to college. But Rhode Island FC is now providing access to affordable tickets, some other options and specialities that we're going to talk about here. The main gist of what's going on is basically Rhode Island FC has cracked the code on finding a way to access a, let's say, higher stream of available fans with maybe not disposable income just yet, but future. This is a future long-term play of having money and interest that could be peaked into one day participating in a Rhode Island FC game or season ticket membership. And to do that, they've initiated this Rush program. If you're watching along on the screen, there's a lot of different initiatives that are going on with it. I think it's super cool. But basically, as long as you have a .edu account, so sorry if you're trying to say you're a student of GeoCities or something else that you want to date yourself to, you get one free ticket per account. You get a $10 birthday merchandise credit at the RAFC shop. You get access to special promotions and additional ticket discounts. There's going to be RFC merch and ticket giveaways that happen as well. Any internal promotions that are happening in the stadium and some exclusivity around special events that happen, like something like maybe a kit reveal party down the road. So I think this is really incredible. I've seen other clubs attempt this in the past. It doesn't always work out, but when you look at what like really makes up the nucleus of Providence, especially Pawtucket next year, it's one of those things where like there's going to be a lot of student traffic. You know, there's so many colleges around College Hill. I think this is going to be a big boon. I think the club is really smart for getting ahead of this by starting it now and seeing kind of what can unfold itself downstream. I have to ask, have you guys ever seen a program like this? I mean, I've seen youth academy outreach. I've seen elementary school outreach, but this is one going after people with potential disposable income and making fans of them either for life or in the time that they spend collegiately here in the state.
You know, I think it does like two big things. It kind of kills two birds with one stone on this. For one, with a lot of the local Rhode Island kids, you're kind of getting them in, kind of showing them what this team is, and they live around here. They probably go to, say, like RIC or URI, more of like a local, more, you know, state kind of college, and they're kind of getting invested in this team that they're going to see for years and years to come. And you're getting those fans in that way, and it can kind of help with the season ticket prices and all that sort of thing, getting more tickets sold. But then on the flip side, when you're getting kids that might be from California or, you know, wherever across the country or across the globe, you know, those kids might go back home and they might eventually leave here and not come back, but you're kind of spreading the team across the country and across the globe. You might get some kid in Nevada wearing an RIFC jersey. Someone might wonder what that is and tune in to ESPN Plus and give it a watch. So you're kind of making it a bit more global. So really, it's good that they're killing two birds with one stone in this way.
I just don't want to see it be where like we make new Orange County soccer club fans, or when Reno 1886 comes back, we don't want to make new Nevada USL fans out of it, right?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like the growth of the global game is, you know, good for all of us. It, you know, RFC, biggest team in the world.
Absolutely.
We're doing what U.S. Soccer Federation has had, you know, almost 100 years to do, and we're putting it on the backs of the tiniest state and all of the USL. And
someone's got to get it done, right?
I love it. All right, what other news we got going on?
All right. Stephen Turnbull was named to Team of the Week. Turnbull was announced to the Team of the Week after his 71st-minute goal helped lead the way to a 2-0 victory over Birmingham Legion. In addition to his match-winning goal, Turnbull made his presence in the back line known throughout the contest. Completing over 70% of his passes, Turnbull also provided a tough physical presence for Birmingham's attackers, winning 8 duels and all 4 of his tackles in a well-rounded performance. Turnbull is the 18th Rhode Island player to get the honoree to the USL Championship Team of the Week in 2024 and the first player to receive the accolade 3 times.
I didn't realize that I knew he'd had it a couple times, but he should basically be in your starting RAFC card collector app rotation. You can't go wrong because you're either going to get a solid defensive performance, and we're going to talk about that a little later based on his post-game interview. But it's for sure thing. If you're not playing Stephen Turnbull every week in the card collector app, you're doing something wrong there. So if that wasn't news enough, and this is a little dated because, you know, for the people that listen to this podcast, I think they're kind of, you know, the soccer hooligans, the crazies, the most in-depth, passionate fans. But we have to cover it just to cross our T's and dot our I's. But Guys, did you know Jack Panayotu's back? Did you know that the Jack Attack has come back?
No way. You don't say.
I mean, allegedly. I don't know. Maybe he played last week. We're going to talk about it. But again, in one of those things that dropped in like very late fashion, very last minute on Friday. And I think there may have been some tactical tomfoolery, if you will. Tomsonery, maybe. I don't know if we can make a Birmingham joke there. But I think that there may have been some strategic value to hold off on this because he was at practice earlier in the week. But the New England Revolution released a media release about Jack Panayotu. So Revolution have reloaned, which is a word I did not know existed, reloaned midfielder Jack Panayotu to Rhode Island FC for the remainder of the 2024 USL season. I think this is interesting because the other part of that next sentence is with the option to recall. So just put an asterisk on it because we've been down this road before. We only saw Jack for, I think, 4 games the last time around, maybe like 4.5 since he got like 20 to 30 minutes in his first appearance. But what's really interesting is Panayotu, now 20, has accrued 17 MLS appearances and 5 starts for the New England Revolution since 2023. On top of his MLS Next Pro stats, which we don't even need to talk about, the Revolution Academy graduate has scored 3 goals now and 2 assists in only 5 starts for the Revs too. But most importantly, he lit the league on fire during Leagues Cup. He came up in such a big way. One of the reasons that we had to see him go back to the Revs was that they were injury depleted, and he filled a very important niche behind the likes of Emma Boateng and just finding places in the field to make a very immediate impact, not only scoring a goal, but kind of setting up some second level assists, some hockey assists, if you will, on some of the other goals that they scored during Leagues Cup. Unfortunately, that work didn't pan out as he saw himself back down with the Revs too, and also with the reinforcements that the Revolution purchased during the mid-season transfer window. And so he was riding pine. And so it makes sense that he comes back, but I really hate that asterisk of the option to recall. Do you think that there was like some conversation Cano had with, you know, Kurt Anolfo and said, you can say that, but if you take him back, like Rhode Island will actively declare war on the state of Massachusetts. Like it... I mean, it's great to have him back, but even when we interviewed Mark Ibarra, he was like, yeah, it's nice to have him back for the second time. Like, it's kind of known that, like, it's like you're putting a butterfly in your hands and you're holding onto it for as long as possible, but it could escape your hands. Like, what do we think about that?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little worried that he might take off at some point. I mean, it's kind of just enjoy the moment, see what he's able to contribute, and just kind of live in it and understand that he's not going to be here forever. It's hopefully going to be enough to kind of get us through and last until the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, depending on how the Revs do, they may be like, well, we're kind of close to that 9th slot. We might just need Jack to kind of get us over the edge. So it's really up to how the Revs do on whether or not he's going to stay. So hopefully they lose a few more games and, you know, he can stick around Rhode Island and kind of get that good playmaker abilities. I like what Jack does on the pitch. It may not always go on the stat sheet, but like you said, with those hockey assists, he kind of, you know, doesn't always get the flowers in what he does in playmaking, but he's definitely a crucial threat no matter where he is on the pitch.
See, I want him just till December. Like, I just want him till like December 15th, and then if he plays an incredible game, if he you know, plays his trade and moves back into the Revs for some opportunity, or that's the launching point for him to be acquired by another MLS team or somewhere else, Europe. I mean, I just don't want him gone in 4 games. Like, we are getting to the business end of the season. We cannot afford to have Jack Panayotu be in our lives for the briefest of moments and then just clutched away at the moment where we may need him more than we realize.
Yeah, I think that's a great point with the idea that if all of a sudden the Revs find themselves in a spot where maybe they creep into playoffs, maybe they might want him back. That being said, you know, RAFC at this point is, you know, almost a guaranteed playoff. We're just kind of figuring out what position we're going to be. So I think he would get a lot more meaningful experience kind of just staying with us to the end of the year and kind of seeing it out.
Agreed. So it'll be interesting. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Jack Panayotu effect on this team here in a minute. But to get through the rest of the news, I think we've got some international updates to go through. We kind of announced it last week, but now we've got the established cadence.
Yeah, so we had mentioned last week about Jojea, his call-up, but it's now official. So he's been called up to the Rwanda national team. You know, I think we all had faith that he was going to make it through that preliminary roster. We wish him good luck. You know, we have some thoughts about who's going to play in his place, but we'll kind of kind of save that for a little later on in the pod.
Do we have thoughts? Because you don't agree with... I didn't get a chance to consult you because I am... I am completely discombobulated this week. I am behind on everything. I think... And we have like...
Been 50, a very busy man this week.
50% yeah. of the show notes. I got the Moment of Zen out late. I got the Wrong Wednesday predictions out late. I'm surprised I showed up on time for this podcast. I'm all over the place. So we'll talk more if you don't agree with what I put out because I did not get to consult you for the first time in a long time. It'll be interesting. But let's finish this news segment so we can get on to the actual game recap. Season ticket member pricing has released. Again, if you're listening to this pod, you already know this, but it's like I just feel like I have to say it. We're not going to talk about it here because we just finished an interview with the Senior Vice President of Ticketing and Sales and Service. So we're going to be dropping that next Tuesday for fans to listen in on so they can get kind of a sneak peek about what Rhode Island FC's strategy is looking like and what you can expect from your experience to be purchasing season tickets or on how that priority ranking is going to be. We asked a lot of important questions like parking. We asked about like where would the away section be for the supporters group that are traveling. We asked where the Jumbotron was in case you were worried about like would it be behind you or in front of you. So we tried to get as much of that in detail covered. Thanks to the fans that helped participate in the questions that you wanted to have us ask in the future. If you're not already on the Discord participating with the rest of the Defiant 1636 and the RIFC fan group at large, I highly encourage you to get in there for really stimulating soccer talk and just kind of being around other fans and sometimes hooligans as well. So I think we've got a couple quick other shout outs that we want to get through and then let's get into this recap.
Yeah, I don't want to say corrections, but just we weren't sure if anyone else in the league was partnering with Culture City for that match day inclusivity. But it turns out that the Birmingham Legion, who we just played, are also another USL team who do that. So
do we owe a correction if we're just taking the news from another source? Don't they owe the correction?
No, I don't want to call it a correction. I think we asked the question, is any other team in the league doing this? And we at the time did not have that information. So we at least know at this point that Birmingham Legion does that as well, too.
You know what Birmingham Legion also does? They lose to us in every match that they face us. Fun fact. I don't know
so
if you
far,
knew that. We'll
yeah.
talk about that.
And then one other thing, we talked about Mauricio Pochettino being named the U.S. men's national team. But I had a conversation with someone the other day. I didn't realize he hasn't actually put pen to paper yet. We didn't at the time talk about it because we didn't have time for it. Apparently they are getting close, but some people have some thoughts about that might not ever actually happen. And it's just a guise of the U.S. soccer pretending like they know things.
Hashtag not a USMNT podcast.
Yeah, just thought that was interesting.
So, I mean, it is. It is very fascinating. I mean, I think they've now announced that that's about to happen and we're going to see it before the training camps. So, I mean, listen, we're not always going to get things right. And sometimes we go off on tangents. And, you know, could we be talking right now about Linkin Park announcing a brand new female singer? We could just have... Do you want to just change this podcast around for the rest of the night? I think listeners tomorrow, they have control of their destinies. They can be like, maybe I want to know more about that. Maybe they're going to stop listening and just shift immediately to that news in case they didn't know that one of the most incredible post-hardcore emo bands of new metal of
it's,
2000s was...
They were just named one of the top four millennial dad rock bands.
That tracks so much for me.
This is breaking news for me. Matt, tell me more.
Unfortunately, that's all I know at the moment. It happened as we were recording. So Linkin Park has a new singer, and it's a female. It's a lady. So congratulations to Linkin Park. Maybe they can come out and have one of their tours at Tidewater Stadium next year. And gentlemen, that is how you bring it full circle. Let's get in to this Birmingham match. I cannot wait to talk about it. It's the first sweep we've had of the inaugural season of the club's history and career. We put the boots to Birmingham Legion, and we are now Tom Soane knows that his student has become the master. Some people are saying, if you check Wikipedia, that Birmingham Legion's daddy is now Connor Smith. It's not important for the sake of this discussion.
Allegedly. It's unconfirmed.
Well, you know who they say it is if it isn't Conno Smith? Edward Kizza, who we're going to talk about in a minute. So let's get into this. Let's talk formations. Jason, walk listeners through what Rhode Island FC looked like lining up against Birmingham.
All right. So in this match, we saw Vegas and Net with Nodarse, Yao, and Dugan in the back line, which was interesting there to a bit of change back there. In that midfield, we saw Turnbull, Holstead, Ibarra, Quisera. And then we saw the return of Jack Paniotu filling in that kind of 10 spot there behind the two strikers of Chico and Fuson.
You know, and then on the bench, you know, because Panayotu comes back, it was one of those interesting things where I don't think this is the right card, by the way, because now that I look at it, was it this one? See, I got it backwards. Look at that. I love that you read the right thing, though. we had an interesting lineup with J.J. Williams still on the bench, Connor McGlynn, Joe Brito, Gabby Alves, Mark Doyle, like you said, Grant Stoneman being displaced by Frank Nodarce, and then Jackson Lee. Gentlemen, I want to start with the obvious. Jack Panayotu makes an immediate impact. I think from a striker position, we knew that that was going to be okay because we had seen some problems in the front striker core. But I want to really touch base really quickly on the continued displacement effect of having too many center backs now on a back three line, and how we've now seen Morris Dugan displace Frank Nodarce, and we've seen Frank Nodarce now displace Grant Stoneman. Krifa Yao, who I think we all had on our bingo board as the one that would be displaced, continues to be a rock in the foundation, center of the center backs. That's a fun title. I got to ask, is this going to be Russian roulette? Like, is every defender just waiting for a bad game before they can get swapped? Because I look back at there was a clean sheet last week, right? It was back-to-back clean sheets. Stoneman put in a good performance minus a yellow card, and yet he sees the pine for this game. So fellow Matt, I want to ask you first. What are we doing here with the rotation of defenders? Is this just truly rest, or are we going to have a really fierce competition for starting minutes down the road?
You know, I think there is going to be some variety, but I think part of it, I do think it has to do with you have a lot of depth and you have a lot of guys that can play the position, and you can give some guys some rest. I mean, you have a lot of different weapons, especially on the defensive side, that can play the game. So when you're only, what, 8 matches now from playoff time, you give the guys a bit of rest. So when you kind of get to that point, they're fully ready to go. And I think when you can afford to actually get some guys a little bit more time to relax and take some time off, I think it's definitely something good to take advantage of. I think it's a good problem. I mean, if you're a team like this, it's a good problem to have when you have too much talent.
Do you subscribe to that? Because, like, I see what he's saying, but I also worry about, like, the confidence of these young players. Like, oh, coach called my number. Like, if Yao gets replaced on the next one, so if tomorrow's game, if Yao's not in the center, then I think Matt's onto something. It's just like, hey, everyone's talented, everyone can rotate, everyone's dangerous. But if Yao keeps starting, then it seems like, well, coach sees something that I'm lacking in my game. I don't know that if it's just relaxation. And as a young player, professional or not, like, do you start to go, oh no, what have I done wrong?
So I, to a certain extent, agree with Matt, but I also got to thinking that, our guest Matt here, that, you know, Stoneman is out of our center backs, he is the oldest, right? So I kind of wonder if was he brought in to a certain extent to partnership with Koke because of that system, now that our center backs have, like, molded into that kind of system, is he the one that's going to maybe be the person seeing the rotation? Because when we look at Yao is the only tank that we have, right? So you always want to put your tank on the field.
Krifa Yao broke a man so violently that he quit the team. Did you guys see that?
No.
I mean, I don't mean to, like, be mean to the injury. You never want to see anyone get hurt. But Temekas today in the Oakland Roots announced he canceled his contract with the Roots to go back to, I think it was Honduras, maybe Guatemala. I don't remember the country he's from. But he literally canceled his contract and decided, I'm just going to recover in my home country because my career here is done. Krifa Yao destroyed my career.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Right? So, okay. But back to the problem. I don't like that you're saying Grant Stoneman's basically ready to be put out to pasture at the tender, the old man age of, like, 26 or 27. I have so many problems with that. But having said that, do you think that it was Stoneman's spot? It's going to be something we now have to watch. It's something we have to build as something to be monitoring, because it is all four of those defenders deserve to be on the field, and there's only 3 spots available.
I mean, at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised to see Yao get the rest, because I don't think he's had any.
No, I think he now, with the rotation in the back line, I think he is at the most minutes. Like, we'll have to check, but
he's due.
He's due for a laydown. Interesting. All right. Well, let's continue on. You know, you guys, we have the main stat columns on the screen here. I started my curiosity here with the back rotation. I'm curious, you know, high level recap of this game. Obviously, we're going to talk about the XG. I think it's the lowest we've ever seen at Birmingham's 0.15. I think there's a participation trophy that if you just kick the ball at the goal from somewhere, you get like an automatic 0.05. So like Birmingham, not their best night. I want to talk about the possession because it almost breaks our narrative we've been building all season that when we have too much of the ball, we end up losing or at best drawing. And I want to talk about the overall performance and what your eyeballs saw and maybe what the stats told is a different story. So, gentlemen, because I'm not as prepared as I normally am, I'm going to let the floor be decided by the two of you. What do you want to bring up? What do we want to talk about?
Let our guest start on his thoughts on the match.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, when it comes to the stats and on whether or not they lie, I think they do lie, and it's where it comes with the score. This was not a 2-0 game. I think this could be even like a 4-0 game, especially with two almost goals by Jack at the very beginning when he almost set the record with the earliest RIFC goal. And then in the second half, early on, when it looked like he scored another goal. And I honestly thought that was going to be a goal, and it was called back. Very disappointing on that. But I think they played a lot more dominant than just what the overall score tells, and they had complete possession. They really dominated that defense of Birmingham, and it was just an overall good performance to kind of give you that boost for the next, you know, 2 months or so, to kind of give you that confidence after those couple of draws, those couple of problems you had, especially with like Oakland with their amazing goalie and with the problems you had with Loudon with that draw. It's just a good confidence boost, I would say.
So then let's skip to the Jack Paniotto effect here for a second. So Jason, I know that you had some thoughts on it. Like Matt said, 25 seconds in, Jack Paniotto almost buries one. The interesting stat about that was it would have been the fastest goal in club history, but ironically, it would have beaten the fastest goal of 51 seconds by Noah Fusan, which was also against Birmingham Legion. So like there could have been a disastrous record when it comes to like the ownership of Birmingham on the night. But like Matt says, he also scored. He did score. It just Stephen Turnbull couldn't quite keep the ball away from the byline. It was in the air. I think it's so close that like you've got to be sure as the assistant referee that like you saw the ball go all the way over in the replay. Honestly, I wouldn't have been mad if we were the other team facing that. I wouldn't have been mad because at the end of the day, like a player had to get there. It was in the air and then they still had to redirect it back into the box. Like you still have a chance to defend it. Jack's in the right place, right time. Barry's a goal that'll never count. So like Matt said, a lot of almosts, but like what did you see on the night? I think almosts do a lot in the long term of the effect that Jack Paniotto has, whether it's in the first 25 seconds of the game or in the, you know, like 60th or no, it's like the 40th minute for that. I mean, we could feel his presence immediately upon instantaneously, even upon his return to this team.
Yeah. It's interesting to kind of look at some of these stats here. And like Matt said, It felt like it could have been a bigger loss for Birmingham. 16 shots, 7 on target, 7 inside the box, 2 big chances created. It felt like this could have easily been a 3-0 game. But Birmingham were stubborn, and they defended pretty well. The actual chances that RAFC ended up scoring were not particularly easy chances. So it just kind of took a long time for them to break them down. We saw almost an immediate impact from Jack when he, you know, nearly scored 27 seconds in or whatever. And we just kind of saw a
Revolution
different...
would have recalled him right away, by the way. I just want to be really clear about it. They would have been like, oh, yeah, we need him back. We want him back right away.
We saw a little bit different in terms of the way we attacked up front. You know, obviously we see players like Fusan kind of drift like throughout different positions up front. But I don't know if I've ever seen a player as active as Jack was up front. It felt like every few minutes he was a left winger, a right winger, he was down the middle, he was, you know, bringing the ball back from the center mid position. He kind of was all over the place, and we saw a really aggressive RAFC in that first 45, and how they got out of that without like suffering a goal is almost a bit amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the fact, and here's the weird thing too, right? Because it's two different tells of the performance on the night. We're talking primarily right now about the goal scoring opportunities, but like the real conversation was the defense, right? You know, if you look back on the stats, obviously the clean sheet is, you know, it's easy to say, right? That's very transparent, but it's also the second one in a row that existed. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that it extends RAFC's 6th straight unbeaten match at home, dating all the way back to June 8th. And it, I love this record because, like, the club is clinging to it. They're unbeaten in 12 out of 13 matches because they can't say consecutively that there's been 13 matches. On top of that, it was the 9th overall shutout for Rhode Island FC. It was Koke's 5th shutout that he's now had. You know, defensively, they did everything right, and the offense maybe just didn't have things going their way until they were suddenly into these, like, you know, not dying minutes, but later minutes in the game. And Jason, you pulled up a stat, which I want to talk about in a second here, but, like, this may be what this club's new, you know, dynamic is. It may be what their new kind of signature move is, if you will, on how this club is performing. But, like, back to what you were saying about stats lying, I also remember sitting there watching from the press box, and I wasn't moved a lot in this game. Like, there were a lot of times where it was like, okay, we tried that. We couldn't break apart Birmingham's caginess. We couldn't break apart their defense. We'll try. We'll reset. Okay, it didn't happen again. I remember there were being long stretches between those opportunities where it's like, you know, we weren't doing everything we could be doing, but at the same time, we were doing everything. Back to what you were saying about Jack Panayotu, this is the first time I saw from that, like, God's eye, that we were no longer just a 3-5-2. With Jack Panayotu, we almost morphed into a true 3-4-3, which we've never seen the permission of those players to have, where Jack Panayotu was on the left wing at one point, then he was on the right wing, then he was center mid. Noah would kind of swap and plug and play there. Historically, our wingbacks anchor the sides, and if they try to plug and switch things in the midfield, they will, but we've never seen the kind of fluidity that this team expressed on the night. So, like, again, stats lie. Was the game boring at times? I wouldn't say boring, but, like, things weren't happening. But when you saw the tactical strategies, a lot of things were all happening at the same time.
It felt like a game of almost. Everything was like someone was making a run and they almost made something happen there. There was, like, they were just slightly off. There's that one pass they were looking for that maybe it's a bit of adaption to, because the team has changed, right, since Jack was, you know, last played with us. We've gone on a long run. The team has gotten significantly better. So they, in a certain sense, have grown without him. So they now have to adapt to his game again to kind of see how everything fits together.
Matt, do you think that there's a long runway needed? I mean, Jack's already played 4 games. This is his 5th one. Obviously, things have grown since his time initially with the team. But to Jason's point, is this almost knocking on the door of absolute, or is there more almost ahead, in your opinion?
So, I mean, for this team, now that Jack is back, I think that game the other day with Birmingham was kind of more like a refresher. I think if we look, like, maybe 3 games ahead, if those exact plays came up, I think those are goals, and I think he's a lot better acclimated into the team. I think it's just getting used to everything again. I mean, when you're going from the Revs to Rhode Island FC to the Revs to Revs 2 to Rhode Island FC, going back and forth, it's a little bit, you know, of a mind challenge. But now that you're back with Rhode Island FC, you're going to have some time to really get used to the system again, hopefully for, you know, 8 games at least, to get used and everything back up and rolling. But I think once he kind of is here now, I think you'll see a better performance in a couple of days and even a better performance a week after that. I think it's all just about getting used to Kano's system again.
Speaking of Kano's system, Jason, Kano in the post-game presser, he called this match the most professional performance this team has ever produced so far in its history. I guess I want to ask you, you know, in your observation of the match, looking at it, you know, interpreting his words on it, and he even had that comment about, like, what I call entertaining soccer versus, like, what maybe I meant to call it. How did you take that away from coach's explanation that this was the most professional match of the season?
Yeah, when we bring up, like you said, it wasn't a boring match, but, and how I said there's a lot of almost, there was definitely the RFC was looking to create a lot of attacks. They just, not a lot of those turned out into anything. And it took RFC 70 minutes to break that deadlock. You know, there was that goal that was rolled off sides. There was a few almost chances. But we didn't see RFC show any signs of frustration. They continued to attack. They continued to press and suffocate Birmingham. I think they slowed that down a little bit in the second half so they didn't wear themselves out. But that didn't mean that they weren't trying.
So let's talk about that, though, because I have not seen this team come out the gate with that level of intensity, at least in a home match. I may have seen it in an away game. But I mean, and that includes the 51st second goal scored against Birmingham Legion in the first go about with this. I can't recall a time where we matched this level of intensity and energy where even if we didn't have the ball at our feet, like we needed the ball back. And I don't think Birmingham was prepared for that. I don't think Coach Sohn was prepared for that from Kano. And we saw it in brilliance. And again, it almost led to a goal in the first, you know, couple of seconds. Do you think that that is something that Coach is now evolving his game to, like, the next level? Or do you think that's a direct response to the fact that Jack Paniotu offers the skill set needed to be able to engage in that? Like, which one is it, either of those, or is it something else?
I mean, it's possible now that with Jack back, this team has gone on a very good run of form with him back now. I think they're starting to, like, there's a growing belief in the team that they can beat anybody. And I think that they are not afraid to kind of play their game and take it to anybody at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of a little bit of a blend of both. I think this team has been getting more aggressive in their style, has been evolving throughout the season. Since Jack left, I think they've been more and more offensive minded. They've been able to score, what, like the numbers are astronomical since they started going on that 12 out of 13 sort of streak. It's just been getting better and better. And I think with Jack in there now, inserting himself in there, I think it kind of boosts the progress even a little bit farther and is going to kind of steamroll things. But I do think it's a little bit of a blend of those two pieces there.
So let's talk about the goals that did happen on the night, not the ones that we can't count. Stephen Turnbull scores his next goal in what he would consider a slump or a drought, which took me completely aback in the interview with him. But he scores the 71st minute opening goal, which led to the, you know, eventual success and victory over the Legion. His first goal since May 11th, which, fun fact, last time he scored was in another Jack P game against Sacramento Republic. So, you know, he talked at length about how good it felt to be back on the scoring sheet. And when you go back and watch the tape on that goal, it really is a thing of beauty. You know, you've got Ibarra taking the initial cross, throwing it dangerously into the box. And then you've got JJ Williams, who's been on for like a total of 4 minutes so far at this point in the game. And he sees the ball, one touches it and passes it back out to the top corner, and then basically pulls the Hodor from Game of Thrones and he holds the door. He just holds Birmingham back. He puts all the defenders literally to his shoulders and just says, "You're not getting near my boy Turnbull." Turnbull comes rifling through the top of the box, one touches it, and it's a goal. And you know, he knew it was a goal the second he did it. What's so crazy though is when you look at the sequence, it's three touches and then a goal, which is sometimes difficult to see at the professional level within USL. Sometimes there's a lot of like steady like need of like, okay, I need to triple touch this ball. I need this ball right where I want it to be able to take that perfect shot. And that wasn't the case on this one. It was like, hey, boom, 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 and a goal was produced. I can't remember the last time a wingback, a defender, a traditional, and he calls himself a traditional defender, comes into an interview and says, "Yeah, my defense is perfect. Like I'm doing a great job there." I mean, he didn't say perfect. Those are my words, but I'm doing a great job defensively, but I was disappointed with myself that I wasn't scoring goals. And I'm glad that I got that off of my, you know, got that dirt off my shoulder. Jason, what was really fascinating to you about that goal?
Yeah. I also was a bit surprised there about him kind of concerned about his goal numbers. He's now up to 3 goals and 3 assists for the year, especially for like someone like you said who sees himself as a traditional right back. He enjoys playing that wing back position, but he very much loves defending. I thought it was hilarious in the press conference when he was telling us about the celebration, how he didn't think he was going to get a yellow card for jumping in the stands there. And how that kind of was inspired by trying to one-up Nodarsay's celebration when he jumped over the first stand to kind of celebrate with the fans. But, you know, he took it all the way to the top. He's like, "No, I'm going right up in there."
Did you see that vertical leap that he had? He was one extra foot, and then he was up and over. Like, there's been some incredible jumping over the barrier from the players this year, but Turnbull's got some hops.
I think it's the adrenaline that they're just running. It just gives you that vertical leap.
Matt, any other surprises on seeing Steven get on the score sheet, or anything about how he commented around, you know, he expects to be scoring all these. Apparently, he needs to be in the running for Golden Boot, at least internally on the team, according to the way he talked on that post game.
Oh, absolutely. I do have to go on a brief little tangent about that goal. It was beautiful. It just the way he was able to do that. And I have seen that goal countless times because I live on the internet. You know, if you don't already know that, I live on TikTok. And I've been seeing this TikTok of Stephen Turnbull scoring the goal, but it's to the audio of this Madonna song that's been trending on TikTok because of Deadpool, and it kind of makes it like a Hollywood-esque moment.
Oh, like a prayer song?
Yes. It's that song, but in the background of Stephen scoring that goal, and it's absolutely beautiful. I've probably seen it at least 100 times.
You're going to have to drop it in your social so I can go watch it next. I am now curious.
It is a hoot. Some would even say a holler.
Oh, man. This show is off the rails. All right. Well, Turnbull gets on the score sheet first, but not to be undone. JJ Williams says, hey, I gave you a goal. What if I go out and get my own? The man, the myth, the legend, one return of the JJ Williams. I wish I had like a Return of the Jedi thing like I did for Endgame. But he returns to form with a 90th minute plus goal after driving it at her home off of JJ Quisera's corner for his second goal of the season. And this was important because the last time this man scored was in our Lou City blowout of that 5-2 victory on June 23rd. You know, we talked at length last episode about how JJ Williams is a striker, maybe at most a false nine, but he's a center forward that's doing all of the right things in terms of his hold-up play, his aerial contribution, and putting a body to any defensive back line. But he just wasn't having the luck of goals coming his way. And in perfect calibration for what kind of needed to get him over his own slump was him putting away that goal. You love to see it happen. He was ecstatic afterwards. He talked, and this like, it didn't break my heart because I have no heart, but he talked afterwards about how, and I don't know if this was in the post game, but it wasn't off the record, so I'm going to share it. I'm going to humanize JJ Williams for a second. He talked about how when he plays the game, especially at home, his son Tripp is there. And, you know, his son will ask him, like, did you score the goals? And JJ has to say, like, no, I didn't today, but the team won, or we almost did. Like, and his son is so, like, fascinated and caught up with the idea of, like, did my dad score a goal for this soccer club? And it's been a minute for him to be able to say that to his son. So, like, he was super excited. He said, like, I ran right over right away. And he had a really heart-touching moment with his son. And you love to hear that, right? Like, because again, these players are humans. They're not just incredibly talented athletes. And he needed this. He needed this at home because he hadn't scored in front of home fans yet either. That's also a big kind of takeaway. And so he absolutely needed to be on the score sheet. I think this is going to revitalize him. I think this is going to rejuvenate him at a perfect time to get hot going into the playoff run. But I want to ask you guys, Jason, we'll start with you. What did you see on the night from JJ's goal and his contribution? He couldn't get man of the match because it was a little too late in the game. They had already voted for Stephen Turnbull, but in my mind, he deserved man of the match for that.
So we're going to see JJ go on a tear now, score a goal a game for Tripp there. you know, it was good to see him answer his critics there. He's now up to 7 goal contributions for the season. He was credited for that assist for Stephen's goal. And you just love seeing a goal go like off the underside of a crossbar. It's great to see.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, one stat shy of a Gordie Howe hat trick, but, you know, I love to, you know, really see him have a game. I mean, with the goal and assist, being able to contribute on both goals, you know, by the end of it, he's kind of oozing with the confidence now. It's good for him and to be able to put that dagger in. I mean, I know it came at the end, but you still never know what can happen. So for him to kind of have that clutch moment, put the dagger in and finish it off, you know, it was really just a good performance overall to see through him, and glad that he's, you know, back to top peak.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, when you think about it too, not only did he have the goal and the assist, but he's also the first RIFC substitute to register multiple goal contributions in a single match at home. The only other time we've seen that was Zach Haravo's off the bench against, again, Birmingham Legion. You can't punch any further down on this club, and then you realize you can when he netted his back-to-back goals against them in their first appearance together. So now Williams gets a little bit of legacy that he gets to bite off on his own. But I got to ask you guys, with this change hopefully in form and to see some continuation of this down the stretch, what do we do about that? Because now we've seen that he's very hyper lethal coming off the bench as a substitute. No player on this team wants to be a substitute in any capacity. They want to be starters. You've got him doing exactly what you need, closing away games, burying daggers, if you will. But we also know he's dangerous and hungry with the 20 to 30 minutes he's getting. But should he get a nod to the starting 11 again, or is this exactly where we need him to be? And is that okay? Jason, we'll start with you.
That's a tough one to answer. Similar to the conversation we had about our backline earlier, a lot of these guys have seen a lot of minutes. I think we want to see them fresh going into that playoff positions. So I think there's going to be some potential here in these final eight games where we're going to see a bit more rotation. So maybe you see the likes of JJ taking Noah's spot, and then maybe they kind of swap roles where we'll see Noah come on for 20, 30 minutes at the end. And then at that point, I imagine coach will kind of just go through the squad and kind of give at least every player maybe a night off to just kind of, you know, relax so that they aren't run into the ground when we, you know, get our home playoff position.
I love it. We're going to talk about that in a second. Matt, do you start JJ Williams now, or do you keep him exactly where he is because it's working for the team?
You know, I think you, you know, give him some rotation here and there. I think that, you know, you might start him a couple of matches for the remainder of the season. But, you know, kind of give everyone that rest. I think that's still something they need to focus on. What I think the real question will be is in a couple months, when playoffs hopefully come around, then what do you do with JJ? I think that will really determine it. But I think for now, you kind of keep him in a couple of starter positions, keep the rotation going, and get everyone their rest.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, there are three people in this room, four if you count my dog that's napping behind me, but we're not Coach Cano, and I have not been able to predict Coach Cano's strategy at all this season, despite how much I pay attention to it. So we'll see what happens on the game day against Pittsburgh this week. Before we get into Pittsburgh, though, I did want to talk about two last things. Jason, you had a very interesting stat that you started looking at and pulling around how dangerous of a team we are when it comes to, you know, the 80th minute plus for this team. Maybe a little bit earlier than that, but we seem to be trending in a very interesting direction on the stat columns.
Yeah, so we talk about this team maybe being a second half team at times, and we've seen a lot of goals in the second half here. You know, RAFC has scored 12 of their 39 goals in the last 15 minutes of a match. That's 31% of our goals. If we expand that to 30 minutes, that's adding another 7 goals, which brings it to total to 19. So 49% of our goals this year have come in the last 30 minutes of game. So I think that we've, you know, we go back to that a professional performance. I think part of that in our physicality and the way that we go after teams, I think at what we are seeing is RAFC is wearing these teams down. And then you start seeing tired legs, and then they're just susceptible to making mistakes. And that's kind of when we start to capitalize.
So I actually have to ask this, because this is probably where my soccer IQ literally falls off a cliff. Is that genuine question here, gentlemen? Is that a good thing or a bad thing in your opinions? Because like, while they have the tenacity, they have the physicality to get the job done and basically over index on their athleticism against teams that will fall apart a little more quickly, that is a type of tactic, but that is a reliance on your ability to endure versus like soccer formation versus like tactics that you want to deploy when it comes to how you build up play and score your goals. I have to ask, is there something to be said about the ability to preserve your game until you can wear opponent down? Or is it something to be said that this team can kill off matches late? I don't think I have an answer. So Matt, I'll pick on you first. What do you think that is?
I mean, I think, you know, being able to kind of score in the end, and if not that that's the only thing you rely on, but for that to be a big weapon in your arsenal, I think it really makes you unpredictable, and it kind of makes it where teams can't really plan for you because they don't know how the end's going to go. You know, I saw a really interesting graphic on ESPN Plus that the key for Rhode Island success is the final third. And I think that's a really good stat line because it really does come down in the end, and you don't really know how to plan for it because you could be leading them in the 90th minute and they could score 2 goals in stoppage time, and you don't know how to stop them. And no one's really been able to figure that out yet when it comes to the very end. So I think it's a strength. I don't think it's the only thing you should be relying on, but I think it's definitely a big component of what this team currently has going for them.
I think it is a strength, but then you look at you know, a lot of the scoreless draws that we have, or even some of our scoring draws, right, where, you know, we've scored goals at other times in games. So if we get to the end of a match and it's 1-1, and maybe, you know, things are just not going the way we had hoped they would in terms of our attack, that's where maybe we see, get kind of disappointed by that. I don't know if this is actually coach's actual tactic where he's like, hey, we'll just wear them down and then we'll score at the end. I think this is just more of a symptom of the way that this team plays, and that a lot of teams are suffocated by a press in terms of the way that we try to keep the ball in the center of the field and in their half. I think, I don't think I put it in the notes here, but I think Birmingham only made it into our third less than 20% of the entire match.
Are you sure they made it in at all?
I mean, they had four shots. I mean, those could have been from long range, but at some point they made it up there.
They had four shots of kombucha when they left the field, because I don't even remember seeing shots. Listen, my dad jokes are over for the night, I promise. But I just want, like, that's what I'm saying though. To your point, it's like, if we rely on that, like, never say die attitude, that is great. That's that energy that coach was saying that he promised to bring from an entertainment value perspective and not a bunch of goals. But I also remember when this club was on the other end of that business where they were letting in goals very late. It comes back to Sacramento Republic, where we had that game in the bag, or Memphis, where we had that game in the bag, and we were also, you know, bleeding goals. So it seems like it can go both ways. We're on the right side of that right now. But I wonder if that is a symptom of we're not quite there yet as a team, and there's a couple of things that we still need to do. We should always be improving, let's be honest. But like, it's fun to say, but at the same time, like, the pessimist in me says that's a negative. Like, when I say the word interesting, is it a positive adjective or a negative adjective in this day and age?
It depends on the cadence of your voice.
True, but mostly when I say interesting, it's
negative. I get you. I think at this point, the team has gotten a lot stronger defensively, so we aren't seeing as many of those mistakes, because a lot of those goals that we were giving up, you know, not to pick on anyone, but we did in the past, a lot of those kind of came down to individual errors where you would see someone.
You keep Khalifa Yao's name out of your mouth, sir.
He's like, he's the most improved player on the team. Like, I think I'd actually be a little worried if I didn't see him on the team sheet, you know.
Well, we're going to find out, but we got to move on. So the last question of this recap against Birmingham Legion, you know, Jack Paniotu comes back and suddenly that Draw Kings record looks like it may be in doubt. Everyone thinks that we are going to win every game for the rest of the season. I jokingly wrote in, like, we will never lose again. And I do want to say, to the effect that Jack P has had on this team, walking around the parking lot before game day was transformative. Okay, you know, a week ago we were talking, you know, maybe we'll still make the playoffs. It's going to be close. Like, we want to make the playoffs, but, like, it's 2 points up and down, and we're in eighth. We're knocking on the door of seventh and eighth continuously. Now we've got Jack P back, and it's like, oh, fourth place, easy. We're gonna get a home field game,
like, and we're like doing the math to see, can we make it to third?
and that's what the fans are talking about. I tried to do the magic number formula. They're out now. John Morrissey released the magic numbers. And we're at 27. So I think it's because it's the number of points available. So it's 34 games. So you got to go by three. So that is, quick math, 112. And then you have to subtract your total from the combined total of your next team. So my guess is it's about like 85 points. And so anyways, our magic number right now is 27. I know how to do magic numbers in baseball. I don't know how to do magic numbers just yet in soccer, so I need to learn. But for those of you listening, for the statisticians, for my quant who listens, I hope you're on right now. In fact, quant, if you're listening live, I need a hillside calculation on how to predict the magic number for this. If 27 is the magic number, drop the formula in the chat and we'll put it up on a banner here while we're going live. The beauty of collaboration. But I have to ask, is back to the question at hand, DrawKings, is this now at risk? And are we okay if we don't get this, because we win every game for the rest of the season? Matt, we're going to start with you this time.
You know, I'm going to say I think it is at risk, and I can already see it now in my head on a nice, you know, end of November day. You could see Jack Paniotu, maybe in New Mexico, maybe in Memphis, lifting up a trophy on a Saturday afternoon. You never know. And I think it is in jeopardy. I mean, when you're looking at the games remaining just in the regular season, I think the only ones that could be tough, I mean, any game could be tough, but, you know, the ones that pose the biggest threat could be Charleston and it could be Tampa Bay. But depending on how those two games go, I think we'll really be saying whether or not, you know, they'll make a good run in the playoffs or it's over. We're going to win it all. Personally, I think they're going to go another 8 games unbeaten.
Ooh, bold statement. Jason, what do you got?
When we look at the games we have left, I think Charleston Battery is probably the most, you know, scariest opponent. At that point, though, with Jack back, do we look at that and think, is that our last draw of the season? Tampa Bay is a bit scary, but then also they're in a bit of a rough spot right now, so I'm not sure what's going on with them, and we will also be facing them at home. We now have picked up more points at home than we have away. That being said, I don't think we're afraid of anyone at this point. If Jack kind of integrates perfectly into the team, you look at a lot of these matches and think, why not? I don't see why we can't finish the season strong and pick up almost all of the points that we have left on the table.
So we'll pull up the stats right as we make the predictions. I still think there's an avenue where we get both the highest point spread we thought we would get to get the fourth place position pull at 54 points, and we still get 2 more draws. So I'm a believer. I want both records. But I will say this, and Jason and I recorded something. We just haven't released it yet. It's been hard to find the timing for it. But we've done a look back on all the inaugural seasons that have existed. We mentioned it last week, but we recorded it separately. This team is poised to do some very special things. So I'll kind of leave it at that. But right now, when you really look at the records that are available, not only could we have the most draws in USL record for not only an inaugural season, but overall, there's also a column where we could get some of the least amount of losses made available in an inaugural season, depending on how you classify inaugural. So we're going to drop that little tidbit probably sometime next week in combination with everything else that we do. So, but I thought it was really fascinating. But we got to move on. Let's get to these stats. Let's get to the table standings. Let's talk playoff run. Jason, hit us with the good stuff.
All right, so that win takes RAFC to 5th place on an 8-13-5 record, giving us 37 points, and our goal difference now is up to +6. RAFC is leading the championship with 26 points since June 11th. That stat pulled from a Nicholas Murray article on the USL website. He's written some interesting things about the
team. He's the communications director for the league, yeah.
If you guys want to check that out. He also brought up a good point that we've kind of been talking about since earlier in the season when we were struggling a bit, that despite the results, if you look at a lot of the stat lines, RAFC's been putting up those numbers. So this like run of good form that we've found ourselves on shouldn't really come as a surprise. It's that whole idea of it took a while for the team to gel, kind of took a while for everything to click. If we take a quick look at the teams around us, Indy 11's on 36 points, and they are visiting Hartford, who are currently on a 3-game unbeaten streak, which is crazy because we thought they were dead and buried, and maybe since we whooped them, they kind of woke up. I don't know what's going on.
Remember, they fired their president, so that has a positive impact for a team. And then also one of the teams that they tied to continue that unbeaten streak was the Riverhounds, which they also beat the Riverhounds earlier this season. So, you know, hey, whatever. That helps us out big time. So I'll take it. Thanks, Hartford.
And then Detroit is away. Detroit's away to El Paso. The Legion have the weekend off, but they will be hosting the Rowdies this following Wednesday. And then Loudoun are visiting Louisville, which will be interesting because Loudoun are a hard team to kind of figure out. I don't think we even figured them out when we played them against that draw.
Good thing we've got another game.
Yeah.
To figure that all out. Matt, you know, before I jump into the Riverhound stats, how is this looking in your opinion? Do you feel like we're right where we're supposed to be? Is there an opportunity where we should have, you know, maybe picked up some points, or did we get lucky and take points somewhere where we shouldn't have? Or does this feel right in this fifth place standing?
Well, this is definitely better than, you know, being in eighth or whatever it is, but I think there's always points that could have been picked up. I mean, the past couple of draws, they were opportunities to really move up in the standings, because I believe both times we had those draws against Oakland and Loudoun, other teams in the East were kind of losing or also having their own draws, really had some opportunities. If we won those two games, I believe we would just be sitting in the fourth seed. So, you know, there were some missed shots, but I think overall, being in the five seed in your inaugural season, 26 matches in and 8 more to go, I think is a good spot. And I am still looking up to that 3 seed, and I think it's a good possibility.
3 seed?
Oh, I'm rooting for the 3 seed.
I'm going to have to ask you to leave this podcast immediately.
All right,
now you're talking crazy.
Like I mentioned, Tampa Bay Rowdies have been struggling. If they continue to struggle, I'm not betting on it. I'm just saying that there is a possibility where it could happen.
Oh, no. Team, I live by the law of lower my expectations, and then when I'm disappointed because they beat those expectations, I win. Have you not been paying attention to how I've been making my predictions this season? If I say draw, it's because I'm thinking there's a win coming. So, I mean, anything. Like Kevin Garnett, anything is possible, Matt.
I thought that was a Tatum quote.
It started with him. Anyways, let's go. So, Riverhounds, let's talk about them. Let's refocus, everyone. The Riverhounds are on a 7-11-9 record with 32 points in ninth place in the Eastern Conference. But here's the catch. They've played one more game than us, and they've even played more games, two, than other teams that are similar near them in the standings. So they are suffering from no games in hand, and they've actually scored more poorly with the results that they've had so far on the season. So while they've been doing better recently, and their form has improved, we're going to talk about that in a second. In their last 5 games, they've seen a significant uptick. But while they've been doing that, it might not be enough for them to sneak into the playoffs. And especially if those other teams with games in hand do what they need to do to get things taken care of, you could see Riverhounds right on the outside line of the playoffs and kind of looking in, asking for one more opportunity they just won't get. Like I said, they've recorded 6 scoreless draws this season, so they're actually beating us. We may be having the draw kings, but we only have 5 nil-nils. They've decided, like, what if we went and took one more from you? So if there is any team that's trying to out-draw king us in some sort of battle of draw kings, it's them. They don't have nearly the number of total draws, but they're trying to make a name for themselves in a different capacity. This team, we're going to get into it, but they're getting warm. I'm going to say lukewarm at the wrong time. And it's going to be interesting to see how we tackle this match ahead. But let's get into the Rhode Island FC formation first and foremost. Let's start with injuries. Surprise, there is none. So I think for the first time this season, and I really do mean that, there are no injuries listed as of right now. That could change. There could have already been an injury. We won't see it till the Friday report comes out. But when we asked Coach after the game, he said that Haravo was game ready. He was in full training. He just wasn't quite ready to be inserted into the game. I think he's going to travel on the day. I don't know if he'll get the start. Some people think that he's going to be going right back in. But Jason, let's walk through this formation and see kind of what's ahead for Rhode Island FC.
All right. So we're thinking here, obviously, we'll still see Vegas and Net, Dugan Yao and Nodarse in that back line with Alves, Ibarra, Panayotu, Holstad, and Turnbull in the midfield with Fusan and Chico up top.
Now, so you gave me the side eye earlier when you saw this slide, and so I'm not going to start with you. I'm going to go with Matt first, and maybe Matt will back me up, or he'll lay my cross to bear. Matt, does this lineup sound accurate? You know, basically we're repeating last week's performance, but with the swap for Jojea Quizera, who's out on international duty, do we see this as a like-for-like to keep the formation kind of, if it's not broke, don't go fix it?
I reckon so. I think, you know, especially when that long winning streak was going on when it first started, kind of like to keep that kind of rotation. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, until it kind of got a little messed up. I think right now, you look at how we did against Birmingham, I think you just plug in someone else in Jojea's place and you kind of just keep that formation going until it proves to be wrong. Otherwise, I think you just keep that momentum in the way that it's currently going. So I think this is a very likely formation for Saturday night.
So the way
I don't even start.
Okay.
Okay. Continue. Go ahead. No, continue.
I'm thinking that we're going to see Fusan take Quizera's place and then JJ make the start up top with Chico. I think when we look at the Riverhounds, they're very much a defense first team. You're going to want JJ in there to kind of try and body against their defenders. You know, not that we're not going to be worried about their attack, but if we're being honest, they don't score many goals. So I think that the idea would here to just be take it to them. I also kind of feel like Kano has his guys and he trusts them. Not that he doesn't trust Alves, but he hasn't been with the team enough for him, I think, to make the start. I think Alves will get some minutes. I just don't think he's going to start.
Okay. I mean, and it's a question that I want to ask a little in a couple of minutes, because the question of JJ Williams and what this team's going to be needed to do on the night, I think it's going to come down to everything you just discussed. I just don't know if I agree with the sequence of events right away. But before we get into that, let's talk through the Pittsburgh Riverhounds and make sure that we kind of cover what we expect them to look like on the night. We've got they've been setting up in a 5-3-2. Historically, they've been in a 5-back line all season. That is definition textbook Lily Ball. This is a defensive, defense first kind of team. It can sometimes be a 5-3-2. It can sometimes be a 5-4-1, depending on a couple of different interchanging pieces in the forward half of the team. But it is always a back five line. And when I say back five, I mean, it's not wing backs that roam like maybe we would call Quisera or Turnbull. It is like all five contain and keep defensive shape on that back line. But we're going to see Eric Dick in goal. We're going to talk about him in a second. Langston Blackstock, Luke Biasi, Ilal Osumanu, Sean Suber, and Danny Rivera in that back five. Then you're going to see Robbie Mertz, Daniel Griffin, and Jackson Walty in the midfield three trio. And then you're going to see Emmanuel Johnson and Edward Kizza in some sort of striker pair up front. There has not been a lot of rotation on this team when it comes to trying new things. It's really just come from moments or instances of need. And so there's a couple of different things right now that are going on with the Riverhounds roster that are going to probably be something that we see an immediate impact this week. Jason, I think we've got a couple players that are not going to be available, and then maybe one player that just recently got added.
Yeah, so they'll be without two of their players. Patrick Hogan was sent off against Indy 11 this past weekend, and a very interesting call. He got a yellow card, and then the ref changed his mind a minute later and gave him a red. They're also going to be without Junior Eto, who will be with the Congolese national team for these African Cup of Nations qualifiers. But they also just signed reinforcements. The roster deadline is
next week on the 9th, I think.
Yeah, it's coming up. So as of today, September 5th, Pittsburgh has acquired Bertin Jaquison on a loan deal from Real Salt Lake. He's a dangerous attacker with pace and the ability to score or set up teammates, says Coach Bob Lilly. He played collegiately at the University of Pittsburgh before getting super drafted to Real Salt Lake. 13 appearances with RSL with one assist and 18 appearances with Real Monarchs with 2 goals and 2 assists. I imagine he will be available tomorrow as they've kind of had difficulty scoring this year. I just don't know in terms of where his level is, if we're going to see him right off the bat and start.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, Hogan, first and foremost, was the center back of center backs for them, and it was the spine of their defensive shape. So losing them on the game is going to be very...
Yeah, that's a big deal. I know it's just you know, stats, but he is their highest rated player.
Yeah, so it's a tremendous opportunity for Rhode Island FC to make something of it. And then as for Jaquison himself, you know, I don't know much about him. I watched a few minutes of his tape. I hate those YouTube like highlight reels.
Goal and assist Despacito 4K remix.
Yeah,
videos.
But it's like house trance music that is instrumental. Like you've heard, like I couldn't hum it to you right now if I tried, but the second you hear it, you know that's a soccer highlight reel video. Like it's synonymous with the game. But having said that, like I do know Real Salt Lake was in contention at one point for the Supporter Shield this year and was making deep cuts into the top of the Western Conference for MLS. They've fallen off significantly since some poor transfer window business in their mid-season summer transfer window. And there's just been other teams that have kind of taken away. So they're still in the hunt for something out of the MLS playoffs. But I think they've realized that with what they have available to them, they don't need Jaquison in the starting rotation. And he's just probably a little too good for Real Monarchs. So this is one of those things where he's going to be trying to get a little bit more elevated gameplay and get some professional minutes at a higher level. I don't know that, like, he only got assigned, the news broke literally a couple hours ago. I don't know if you get the start. We didn't play Jack Panayotu the first time around on the initial we built into that. So I don't know if that he'll be available, but I don't know if we'll see him in the starting 11. He should be a sub off the bench, but I don't know if he'll be starting 11. Matt, what thoughts do you have on this formation?
I mean, formation-wise, I think it's a pretty solid formation on what is likely to be done by this Bob Lilly team here. You know, I mean, there's a reason that they've allowed very few goals this season, and I think they'll kind of stick to those methods of having a five in the back like that. But on the new MLS signing loan transfer, I don't think we'll really see much of him. Maybe a little bit in the end off the bench, but I think he'll probably have to get used to that new structure, but he'll probably end up coming out maybe in a couple of weeks.
I mean, as long as it's not against us, that's where you don't want to find a striker trying to get hot from an MLS loan product. But let's get into the Pittsburgh game style. So we're going to talk a little bit about what Pittsburgh has been up to, and then Matt is going to talk about a recent interview that he had with head coach Bob Lilly. But before we get to that, you know, Pittsburgh right now is unbeaten in their last nine. I think I said five a second ago, but that was in their last goal scoring opportunities. They've had a lot of nil-nil performance opportunities along the way. But that being said, they've scored 16 goals and they've only let in five goals. Like, let that sink in, listeners. They've only let in five goals in the last nine matches. That is a defense-first type of team. But before they went on that rough run of form, not winning a match for over 2 months, the previous Shield winner had been kind of going through a rough go after losing one Albert Chico Dequa. We can call him Chico again, right? Like, I don't know if we've given that permission, that power back to him. But as we alluded, he's been playing better as of late. And, you know, with the likes of Edward Kizza now kind of stepping into the ranks of an absent Chico, they still find themselves on the outside looking in at that ninth place. And I hope they do not make it into the playoffs on that record. We said this earlier on a preview recap of Pittsburgh the first time around. The Riverhounds, or as Lily Ball, as it has been so rightfully dubbed, they're the definition of unattractive American soccer. And it's ironic that Lilly comes off of his 400th win as a North American domestic coach, because, you know, like, I look at this as the, like, this is U.S. men's national team style play since, you know, circa 2018 and beyond. I think I said that joke the first time around. But for those of you that are uninitiated, or you forgot the nil-nil performance that we had last time we played Pittsburgh, Riverhounds are really impressive in the fact that they have one discipline and they execute that discipline every single time. They do not change their tactics or their style. And that style is they basically kick the ball and chase it wherever it goes on the field. They don't do anything creative. They don't do really any kind of dribbling or any finesse. They rely on their sheer athleticism to carry the day. If you've been watching the Riverhounds this season, it's been basically back to that rule one. I think, to Jason, your point, like, they had fallen off earlier on as they were trying to figure out the players that needed to fit that model and that system. But it's very boring and it's very unattractive. And it's not like what you see when you watch more advanced leagues, or just any other league for that matter, around the world. But it works for the Riverhounds. And, you know, I'm reminded of when we interviewed Mark Ibarra earlier this week ahead of this game. Mark mentioned something when we were talking about what Lilly had as an impact to him. And he said that in the interview, the thing that he had to learn the most, and he didn't like that he had to learn it, was how to play the ball, or how to play the game without the ball at your feet, or with the ball at your team's possession. For Lilly, it's a lot about your positioning and how you shut down passing lanes, how you shut down attacking sequences, and how you really clog everything up and just make the game as ugly as possible.
It's impressive how, if you watch them, they at times look like a foosball table because they are so perfectly in their straight lines. Like, it's impressive in a weird way to see a team that rigid in their, you know, positioning.
Yeah, it's like choreographed soccer almost. Like, you will not move past this line. If you do, there will be beatings and punishments occurring. But yeah, so they're not about possession. They don't care about it. They're more about playing the exact game that they've been trained and drilled to play. And basically, when they do get the ball, they shoot it long, they shoot it out, and they try to catch up to it. And they rely on that speed and that physicality. So it has all the landmarks of, again, just like, if a creative team can figure out the solution to pick the lock on the door, some bad things can happen Pittsburgh's way. And it has happened on the season. But like I mentioned, five goals conceded in six in the last nine matches. That's a pretty good points per game against for them, meaning that, like, they're just a tough team. They're a tough nut to crack right now, and it shows. You know, like I said, They're good at the long ball. That's their game right now, is sending it forward. They're fourth in the league for that, which, you know, we're third. So, okay, you know, you can't beat us just yet. And while they don't ultimately score a lot of goals, averaging only one goal per game, it's like ugly open mic night poetry at like your random coffee bar on what they do score, because the answer is that defense. The only thing I'll say is that, like, or expect this team to just stay anchored and glued. I don't want to say park the bus, because they do have movement. They do have traction. They just love that defensive shape so much that, like, it's going to be very difficult to get them to do anything but that on the night. I just don't know. I don't know how this team, it's really going to go back to this question. And so I want to start this off by asking both of you. They don't let a lot of goals against them. Rhode Island FC has found a way to score a lot of goals since they've really gotten into the form that they've become. So guys, how does an unmovable defense compete against an unstoppable offense? Matt, we'll start with you.
Well, this does sound like the perfect opportunity for the 14th draw of the year. But I mean, you have a team that can't be stopped offensively, and you have a team that's, I believe, they're second right now for goals allowed all season. I believe the number's 25, if I'm not mistaken. It's going to be tough, and, you know, both teams are defensively minded in a sense where they both play fantastic defense, and so I think it's going to come down to just who has that better offense, because you have two high caliber defenses, and I think it's really going to come down to offensively who can get the ball in the net and kind of get it. I think it will be low scoring, but I think that's what it's going to end up coming down to in the end of it. And I mean, with Pittsburgh, I mean, you know, like you said, and just to go on that, I mean, they are a boring team. You know, they're not the supermodel girlfriend, but, you know, they're the, you know, old reliable. They're the one that they're not going to cheat on you. They're going to take care of you, and, you know, they're going to be reliable and get the job done. And I think it's going to be a tight fight, but I think it's going to come down to who can really edge out on the offensive side of the ball.
I just want to see a bumper sticker with the picture of Bob Lilly's face that says, "We'll never cheat on you." I love it. Jason, what do you got for this unstoppable defense, or unmovable defense, unstoppable offense?
You know, we talked about their growth throughout the season. They started the season with three straight losses, then picked up three wins, and then they didn't win a match for 2 months. You know, they found it difficult this season to score without Chico, but they've retained that Lilyism, and they're very strict and rigid. I think they are a difficult team to break down, but I think, like we mentioned earlier on, I think we're playing them at the right time because of two key misses in their back line.
And I think that's going to be why I was reflecting when you said J.J. Williams is to the front of that. If this is a team that is going to be defensively focused first, and there's a change of the guard, so to speak, in some of their most important people, it almost feels like, you know, do you spend that capital in an early J.J. attempt, or do you wait till they're at their most fatigued, at their lowest, they're in their secondary or tertiary rotations of defenders, and then you bring a J.J. Williams who's like, I'm here to, you know, take names and wreck faces. I don't know what the answer is to that, right?
It
could go either way. But our team is not historically known for scoring very early. We can do it on occasion. But like you said, if we're over 30% of our indexed goals is coming late, we may need a very tired Riverhounds. Like, we can take our time. We don't need to be like too rushed or stretched thin on our own defensive measures. So maybe there's a different offensive weapon or attack. Maybe it's Doyle. I don't know. But, like, I don't know if maybe we need that impact sub for this one particular game, because the Riverhounds are going to be the hardest nut to crack of the season.
Yeah, and if there's the potential there to take it to them early and force them to come out of their shell defensively, I mean, that just plays into our hand at that point.
So you're saying go step on the snake early and then see what they have to do to change their... I mean, Lilly will never change their tactics. He'll just accept the loss right then and there. But speaking of Lilly... Matt, you got the privilege, the honor of interviewing him. I got to listen to the interview on your radio show. I always find it fantastic and fascinating to hear the insights of a gaffer. Walk us through what insights did Coach Lilly kind of impart upon you as you got a chance to interview him ahead of this game?
You know, I have to say, first off, Coach was an interesting interview. It was good to talk to him in the primetime slot for a nice 15-minute chat. And look, I mean, you know, we talked a bit about the game overall, and his focus is on trying to figure out how to stop the offense. He credited both teams on being exceptional on the defensive side, and he admits to the offense not being on best performance as of late, and just overall that they're, you know, kind of missing something. And even went on about Chico, and he does miss having Chico on that offense and just the scoring ability that he had. But at the same time, what he wanted to make clear is that his team's not going to just focus on Chico. As much as they know about his playing ability, he can't just focus on him because he knows that Rhode Island will be able to strike in another way. If they shut down Chico, it's going to take a bit of work. Someone else is going to find the open gap. So trying to figure out the strategy on how to take Rhode Island FC's down is really what he's trying to focus on, but it's going to be a bit of a struggle.
That's why Mark Ibarra is going to find the way to score against his former team. Like former teammates always have this penchant to find ways to score against their former families. As a, hey, remember when you could have had me and you chose?
It's written in the stars.
Exactly.
Mark Ibarra cross to a Chico header.
Oh, you need to add that as a part of your prediction. I will say this. We didn't really talk about it. You know, Zach Haribo is back to 100%. There have been some questions, especially when we dropped the wrong Thursday formation of, well, Haribo gets the start again. I don't think you do for this game.
No, he just come back from an injury. You don't want, with playoffs coming up, you don't want to risk him getting injured again. I think maybe we see him for a few minutes, but I wouldn't imagine coaches
well, even throw with
him
the
right
injury,
back into the fray.
Even with Ibarra knows what's going on. As a defensive midfielder, like you want Ibarra out there. I mean, the team, the weirdly enough, the Riverhounds are basically the same team from last year, minus Ibarra and Chico. So, like, I think you would want, because he's not really offering offensive needs, but defensively, he knows what to expect from that team. So, maybe I'm a little biased there, but I would love to see a Mark Ibarra to Chico header from a corner. I written in the stars, like you said. So really quickly, let's get through these. We only have two players tonight because we wanted to focus on these two, and also because Patrick Hogan was a last minute scratch. Jason, walk us through Edward Kizza and why he's one of the two players we have to watch in this game.
Yeah, so Kizza was touted to be the replacement for Chico, but he's had some mixed success this season. He's on 7 goals and 1 assist. His main issue this year, though, seems to be that consistency. He struggles to put in consecutive good performances, and also in terms of getting like back-to-back goal contributions. If he's locked in, as the kids say, you know, we could be cooked, but it's kind of up in the air whether or not that's going to happen.
You've just alienated so many. You've made us so many new fans and alienated so many others. I've got Eric Dick because when teams do find a way to bypass the back line of the Riverhounds defense, they still have to face Eric Dick in goal. And Dick right now is a keeper who has basically kept the Riverhounds in the hunt with a 76.6, and the .6 is important here, save percentage, earning second place in the league overall with 49 saves on the season, and has had the best recorded year performance so far with fewest goals conceded at just 15 goals on the season, or .8 goals per 90. That is a man that, like, we say brick wall all the time, but like, he's really, if he isn't benefiting from the back five that are in front of him, he's making sure that any other business that's getting past them, he's cleaning up. He's got 11 clean sheets on the season. Sure, some of those are that 6-0 performance, but you know, he still has 5 where they've been able to put the pain or the hurt on their opponents and then walk away with that clean sheet. So they've been getting better, and it's been through the capabilities of Dick in that back line. And it's going to be someone that it's going to be very difficult to find the back of the net on. And also his PK save rate is also like astronomical for the year. A lot of focus has been on Danny Fadello in Sacramento Republic. He's kind of like a name brand keeper when it comes, like, I'd say he's on par with Koke Vegas as like a brandable name in the USL. But Eric Dick is by far the bigger keeper on the season right now. So, gentlemen, we're going to finish this off. What are the elements that Rhode Island FC needs to do to take points at Highmark Stadium this Saturday? Jason, we'll start with you.
Bob Lilley squads are tough to break down, as we've alluded to. but they're going to be missing two players from their back line. Hogan, like we had mentioned, due to that red card suspension, and then Junior Eto is going to be with Congo for the national team. That being said, there are other players that will be able to deputize those positions. Lily Ball is a system. They are a system team.
It's an institution.
So, but ultimately, I think that's going to give us a slight edge against their defense because those are two of their better players. You know, we mentioned how they play a five back line, but when they do see some share of the ball, Junior Eto is actually a very good attacking left back as well. You know, without that presence there to add to the attack, I don't know if their backup for him can kind of bring that same level. You know, outside that, the team's going to need patience. You know, Pittsburgh, difficult to break down. And also, because of that, the team's going to need some clinicalness on the night. We may only see ourselves get a few chances or opportunities. And if we can't put those away, like, this could be 0-0 and, you know, our 14th draw.
I swear you copied my notes, like, word for word. So I'm going to go to Matt next for his insights on what Rhode Island FC needs to take away points while I think of something brand new to say that isn't what you just did.
Well, you know, Lily Ball is definitely something that is tough to break down. But, you know, in talking to Coach yesterday, he's really going to be focusing on the top and focusing on taking away the dangerous spots. So basically, this team needs to kind of figure out some new spots to score in. They can't really, you know, use the common ways they kind of chalk up those scores. Have to play differently because he's been watching tape. He's ready for what this team typically does. So kind of need to vary what's been going on as of late, and which I think it's something that this team can do. This team constantly adapts and can figure out new ways to score. But I think that's really what they're going to have to do is adapt and try new things, kind of experiment a bit. And I think that's what's going to come down to this game on Saturday.
Yeah, I think when you know that you're emphasizing defense on either team, it kind of becomes a rope-a-dope situation where one team is just absorbing pressure, they're absorbing attack, and they're just trying to find that moment where a worn-down offense that's exhausted themselves can be taken advantage of, right? To quote the boxing strategy, I think RFC is going to be peppering the Riverhounds all night. We may not see it be super lethal and get very far, you know, into like a deep penetrating attacking opportunity, but I think that RFC is going to be doing a lot of resetting, moving the ball across the pitch, trying to find a way to break down that foosball shape that the Riverhounds are going to be offering on the night. But that being said, like you said, Jason, when it does happen, and it will be a couple of times, you know, Rhode Island FC is going to have to be extremely lethal on those opportunities, but they're going to be very clinical to be able to put the game to bed and take all 3 points. I imagine this game will be decided in the final 15 minutes, maybe into stoppage time, similar to the track record we've been establishing for ourselves. Because, again, when a defense needs to weather the Ocean State storm that is coming their way, it's going to be who can outlast the other team. And I think that we have enough firepower if we reserve the minutes that we want to play with the powers that be and the attackers that we can kind of insert into the field. I think that we can catch the Riverhounds by surprise in the later minutes. I can't talk anymore. But that also means that Rhode Island FC can't get frustrated and they have to still play the game they need to play, which is this, you know, build out the back when it's appropriate, long ball when it's also appropriate. They can't get caught in like being overexposed, not to a transition, but just like they've put too many numbers for trying to find that goal scoring opportunity, because that's where Pittsburgh shines in trying to say, okay, well, you've brought everyone to the party. Now we're going to go the other direction with this ball and see what we can do. So I think if they can keep their composure in almost like a similar foosball situation, maybe this is just the game of foosballs and we're not actually playing soccer. But I think if they can do that, I think we're good for at least 1 point. I wouldn't be surprised if we take all 3, but that's where I'm going. In terms of what people think the actual projections are, this is the highest draw I've seen on the stat line in a long time from the fans and from the local bettors that are placing wages on this team. 32% think Pittsburgh is going to take the win. 37% believe it's the draw Kings returned. And 32% think it's Rhode Island. So that's about as even keel as you get, but draw Kings nevertheless are the higher one. We talked about this last week. Jason, I have to give you credit. I talked some smack and I said, hey, look, I can get a score prediction right. And you're like, what if I did the same thing? So I'm still at 17 points. I'm still beating you, but you have closed the gap. You are up at 15 points. And then our quant, the hillside, is at 10 points. Still haven't gotten any confirmation if the numbers I've projected for him are accurate. So if he's not going to challenge it, he is in last place in our competition. So Jason, since you got the perfect score prediction, even though we have a guest, you still get to go first. So take it away.
It's not a surprise that these two teams are most likely to draw against each other. But like I had mentioned, I think we are playing them at the right time. With those two losses in the back line, I think it's, like you mentioned, it's going to be a tough match, but ultimately, I think we're going to see a 1-0 to the Rhode Island.
Matt, what do you got?
Well, I do want to say first, if I may, if you did mention the local bettors. And what I find interesting, and I have these numbers in front of me right now, Rhode Island FC is currently at plus 230 on the money line, with Pittsburgh at plus 110, and the draw is at plus 220. So a little bit interesting, but I'm going to take Rhode Island here. I think they are going to be able to break through that Lily Ball defense. And I will say it is going to be 3-0.
Ooh.
And I think Chico gets a brace.
Hey, I'd love to see that.
I want whatever was in your Dunkin' Donuts cup when you came in, because I want to have that kind of optimism in my life at, you know, almost 10 o'clock at night. But I will say, I think that it is going to be a draw, gentlemen, because I have to live my life glass half empty, or donkeys half empty in this case. I've already made the declaration that we'll never lose again, so I have to at least start from a baseline of drawing. but that being said, I just don't know that this team is going to be able to break down Pittsburgh's defense and then also not get scored upon in some sort of weird counter attack or surprise attack that maybe the River Hounds can produce on the night. Anything seems like it's possible in the chaos that is Highmark Stadium. It is a home field game for them. So I'm terrified that it's a 0-0 draw, because not only would it give us 6 0-0s, but it would give the River Hounds 7. So we'd still be below them. So that is my darkest timeline.
They can have that record. We don't.
I totally hear you. I totally hear you. But, you know, if you're watching along at home on the screen, we do have the projections up. And in the best possible timeline, at the 54-point spread, that would easily put us in fourth place, potentially knocking on that third place positioning. That projection has gotten every game since we started tracking it correct. The one where we played it more even keel, which would have us as a draw this game, has been a little bit more inconsistent amongst the group. And then our very own Hillside has gotten every game except for the Indy game correct. So he's at almost a perfect record himself. Both our favorable high point projection and the Hillsides have us both winning this game. So the Hillside has this at a 2-1 win for Rhode Island FC. I'll be curious to see if we have that go all the way across. But more to come, and I can't wait to see what's going on Saturday. So, hey, we're really close. We're danger close to being way too far over time, so we're going to rapid fire these. I'm going to say the name of who I want to answer, and you've got 10 to 30 seconds to answer the question. So here we go. Ready. Jason, with AST on the verge of returning to the team, where do you see him slotting into this lineup?
Somewhere in the center mid. Either Cam or, you know, maybe we'll see him give Holstead and Ibarra some rest.
Okay. Matt, another Matt. Matt J, being so close to a home playoff game and the draw record, which draw do you not think will come back to haunt us? Hartford away, Memphis, Detroit away, or a different one?
Which draw do I think will haunt us the most? And what were my options? You kind of rushed a bit through me.
You got Hartford, Memphis, Detroit, or any draw that you can come back to your mind that says it should have been a win on the season?
Oh, it's got to be the Memphis one. It has to be. That game was in the bag and two went in the end. I think if anything's going to haunt us, it would be that Memphis game.
I think maybe Sacramento too, because I feel like we had that game in the bag and it just last minute goal kind of crept up. But I think it was also because we didn't think Sacramento, we could do that to them. So Jason Scott writes in, to what extent do you think Kano should be mindful of players considering their options to leave when choosing who to field towards the end of the season? Layman's terms, if we're not playing certain players, are they at risk of leaving the team next year?
Good question. I think we kind of talked about this a little earlier in the pod, but I think in this kind of stretch towards the playoffs, I think it is a good opportunity to kind of swap out some of the players, make sure that everyone gets some rest, and in turn make sure that some other players get some minutes, and then also maybe use that opportunity to show coach why they should be here.
So you said all the right things, but you didn't name a player. So give me one player that you think's at risk.
Oh, one player that's at risk.
I think you're spot on, but like, what's a player that would fit that category? And Matt, I'll ask you the same thing in a second.
Maybe Connor McGlynn, because he's not getting a lot of minutes.
So for like a player that kind of is in jeopardy of that, I mean, that's a tough call. I mean, maybe Joe.
Okay. I think Colin Smith is done at the end of the season. He's not getting enough time, and I think he's got the caliber to be getting. I think in another team in the USL, he could be getting starting minutes. So I think those would be the initial three, not knowing their contract lengths, but if they were on 1 year or one plus, that they would probably be the most at risk. And then Jackson Lee, I think, is just going to get a fat contract offer that we can't say no to. So anyways, let's wrap things up here. Jason, let's kick us off with some of the events coming up. We've got some away games here, so no home games, but let's wrap things up.
Yeah, so RAFC starts the first leg of their back-to-back road games, head squaring off against Pittsburgh Riverhounds this Saturday, 9/7 at 7 p.m. The official watch party is at West Rib House in Providence, or come hang out with Defiant 1636 at the Guild in Pawtucket. If you can't come in person, that game will be available on NESN and ESPN+.
And then RFC heads out for their longest away trip of the season as they head to take on Orange County Soccer Club in a late night match starting at 10 p.m. So for those of you on a Saturday wanting to watch soccer, it's going to be a late night. It's so late, in fact, that the Defiance will not be having a party at the Guild for this game. So your only choice is going to be the official watch party with RIFC at the Thirsty Beaver or watching the game on ESPN+.
Yeah. And then...
Well, before we go, hold on. Before you want to read us out, Matt, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate you being here. Before we say our goodbyes and our anchors ups, where can listeners find you?
Well, for one, they can find me on the playbook on 990wbob.com. All things sports. We got a great show next week as well. We got two guests on, one of which soccer related. We got a Coach Mears of the USL Super League, so that will be one to listen in on. You can also follow me on the Twitters, on the Twitter machine, and we have the very creative handle of @MatthewCarvalho, but take off the last two letters and add the 1-1. I didn't know how to make a handle many years ago, and now it's what I'm stuck with.
Well, it's been great having you on. We can't wait to connect with you a little bit later this season and get some more insights. It's always great having you on the show and get your perspective. So on that note, Jason, send us home.
Yeah, thanks, Matt, for stopping by. All right, guys, make sure to check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket for all your New England soccer coverage, including RAFC news at theblazingmusket.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Threads, and TikTok at RAFC Podcast, Instagram at Raising Anchor, and then we got that website, www.raisinganchorpodcast.com.
Anchors up, and can't wait to see what we do this weekend.
Anchors up.